There are only 210 chalk streams in the entire world, and 160 are in England. One of them flows through the Chalk Valley, and 64 of them run within the Wessex region. Water is a big issue at the moment, especially in the areas, you know, it comes up a lot at the paper, and it's come up a lot in the election campaign. They are beautiful and of untold ecological value. In this discussion, the UK's number one champion of rivers, rock legend Fergal Sharkey. discusses with Guy Waters his love of chalk streams, their unique ecological value, the threat they face, and why it is imperative that we take much better care of them than we are presently doing. Thank you very much. Enjoy the talk.
Thank you.
Thank you. This doesn't feel like a tough crowd. But, you know, it's going to be a tough talk. It's going to be a tough talk because, you know, as Ben was kindly saying, you know, water is at the heart of this election. It's a major campaigning issue for all parties. And there's obviously no one better than to talk to about this than Fergal. So we'll probably talk for about 40 minutes and then we will questions from anybody. I have told the dining tent that we will be there at 2:15. So, you know, if when it's 2:14, there'll be no more questions because we haven't eaten yet and all we've done is drunk wine in the green room. So, you know, this is important. So what I'm going to do, I just want to read out a paper written in 1929 to introduce this talk. And it's something that I'm sure that you've all read, which is a little chapter in an academic journal from 1929, and it's called The Hydrogeology of Underground Water Conservation in England and Wales. Okay, so it's a 100-year-old paper. And this is just two key lines from it. Chalk in the home counties and the London Basin. In the home counties of Hertfordshire, Middlesex and Surrey, which supply the London Basin, the chalk aquifer is considered to be pulped to almost extinction. 1929. The underground supplies to the London area, the home counties and Kent, are thus becoming a problem of the future, because not only are supplies from the chalk here being used up, but second best underground supplies from the lower greensand are also being used up. Now, I have to declare an interest here because the man who wrote that was my grandfather, a man called R.C.S. Walters, who was president of the Water Engineers in 1929, who was constantly warning that we are screwing up our water supplies. And Fergal and I have interviewed each other for various newspapers over the past 5-6 years, and we're now members of the same club. It's my fault. But anyway, so when I found that, we both thought that was extraordinary, that there, you know, was my grandfather, 1929, saying, we are ruining the chalk streams, we're ruining the aquifer.
Well, there's two levels to how brilliantly insightful, and by the way, hello and thank you all for coming. As you can probably tell, yes, there may have been a glass of wine involved. It's a terribly bad company. And I suddenly remembered, oh, yes, what happened the last time, Fergal? There was lots of sunshine and wine involved. It didn't end well.
Yeah.
But hopefully this will go much, much better. Here's the thing. What an unbelievably, brilliantly insightful man your grandfather was. Because believe it or not, here we are almost 100 years later. London, the south and the southeast of England, is now on a list, number 9, of the global cities most likely to run out of drinking water. London is now on a list along with Cape Town, Jakarta, São Paulo, Mexico City, and we live in a G7 member state, a rich industrialized Western nation, and our capital city and the surrounding countryside, 25 million people, are on the cusp of running out of drinking water. And in fact, the EA recently put a figure on it. We will need to find 5 billion litres of water over the next 25 years just to keep Salisbury and London's taps running. And at the minute, the cost of that, according to the Infrastructure Commission, is going to be somewhere in the region of 60 billion quid. And I'm assuming, like every other big public spending project in this country, by the time we're done, that'll be 180 million. So you know what? Big round of applause to R.C. Walters, because was he clearly a clairvoyant? And guess what? Nobody listened, and I'm not sure they're still not listening.
Oh, well, a big round of applause to my grandfather, I'm sure. And I just want to get back to exactly just a little teaching for those who don't know. What is the aquifer? What is that big underground reservoir? Let's move your chair forward a bit.
Here's the thing.
Keep rolling back.
Where you are currently sitting, about 70 to 100 million years ago, you would have been on the bed of a sea somewhere off the equator. And what you were looking at up in this ridge and the hill behind us, and if you dig your heel in and get down below that 2 inches of topsoil, you will find the white chalk. And that layer of chalk runs from Norfolk diagonally across southern England all the way down into Wiltshire and Dorset. It's what gives the White Cliffs of Dover its name. It's what gives the name to the Isle of Wight. And it creates the whole Salisbury landscape you see around you. And here's the really staggering part of it all, because I can't actually put a number on it. What you're actually looking at is calcite. It is the skeletal remains of microscopic plankton that died in an ocean almost 100 million years ago. Now, something so unbelievably, infinitesimally small, can you even gauge the number of coccoliths, as they're technically referred to, that died to create that chalk ridge that runs from Cromer in Norfolk all the way down into South Dorset and in places is hundreds of feet deep? It is just, think of the biggest number you possibly can and multiply it by the even biggest next number you can possibly think of. You still will not have a number big enough for these skeletal remains of these microscopic insects. So the next time you complain about your hot water pipe clogging up or your boiler breaking because of all of the limescale, just remember that's somebody's dead body that you're playing around with.
But so what this does effectively, and again, if it's teaching people to suck eggs, I'm sorry, but that is acting as this massive underground sponge, isn't it?
Well, it does kind of three, four things. It is probably the best water filter on Earth. So if you can imagine rain following in these hills and in southern England, and that rain percolates through this chalk layer, that is the best water filter known to mankind. It then will hit some kind of impervious layer below it, clay, granite, whatever, and it starts pooling and creates this massive, huge underground reservoir. And it is that reservoir that then breaks through cracks and fissures and feeds and creates our chalk streams. So there's three things about chalk streams in themselves that are unique. No other river in the world. This incredible source of really high quality pristine water. It also comes out, should theoretically, about 10 degrees. So even on a day like today, the Ebble chalk stream should be about 10 degrees. The Avon, the Nadder, the Bourne should be about 10 degrees. Even in the depths of winter, 3 feet of snow, the Ebble, the Bourne, the Avon should be about 10 degrees. Because you're talking about water that fell on a landscape weeks, years, decades ago, chalk streams, by definition, generally should not be influenced by heavy rain and by floods. So now you've created this ecosystem with the highest quality water in the world at a steady flow rate, at a steady temperature, and that's what gives birth to this incredible biodiversity and the richness of flora and fauna that can only be seen in chalk streams, and it's all due to a freak geological accident almost 100 million years ago somewhere near the equator.
And they are just, England, Wales, and I think they're like five in Normandy, but they're very much an English and Welsh thing.
I have to caveat this, because I will get a letter from somebody in Yorkshire going, you keep saying that, Sharky.
Yeah, come on. But
There are a small handful in Yorkshire. There you are, I said it.
Okay, yeah, well, that's fine. But basically, they're a kind of southerny thing, and I think, what, they're 225, whatever it is. So sometimes people call it England's Amazon. Is that an exaggeration?
Not in the least. Because of that freak of geology, it is a river system that cannot be replicated anywhere else in the world. You simply cannot do it. So if Belgium wanted some, they would have to unwind 100 million years worth of evolution.
And buy trillions of little skeletons.
And buy untold numbers of little skeletons.
Exactly.
So the truth is, this is one of the rarest ecosystems on Earth. Not 5 miles away is one of the primary rivers. Now, as a fly fisherman, you get into a slight discussion that the itching's almost as good as the test, but nowhere near as good as the Avon. And you can get into really big, long, heated discussions in a pub on a Friday night.
Okay, so how many fly fishermen or women are here? Hands up.
There we go.
Yeah. And how many people live within, say, 500 metres of a chalk stream?
So just I hate you all.
Just about all of you. Yeah, exactly.
As a resident of North London, I hate you all.
No, but come on. So let's talk about that. You live in North London, but you live near a chalk stream, and you're the chairman of a chalk stream. Let's talk about your personal involvement in your chalk stream.
Well, I was foolish enough to find myself as a 10, 11-year-old boy in the clutches of an educational Irish educational institution called the Christian Brothers. And if you ever saw one of those really scary TV programs, it's for real. I lived that experience. Now, in terms of my school, it was a very simple idea that if you thought your evenings or your weekends were going to be your own for the next 6 years, you were deeply delusional and you'd lost your mind. And as part of the induction, you probably went through a similar thing. Here is a long list of after-school clubs, societies, and you will volunteer for at least six. And if you don't do it voluntarily, we will nominate six. And guess what the better answer is going to be, Fergal? Extraordinarily stupidly, I ticked a box next to the word hurling, which is this incredibly aggressive, competitive sport we have in Ireland. Or as I now explain it, I wasn't actually born with this nose.
Oh.
It's been finely sculpted on the end of 3 feet of ash. Extraordinarily, I ticked a box marked debating society. My friends roll their eyes at this point and go, oh, yeah, like we never noticed, Fergal.
Yeah.
And that might explain why I became the youngest ever captain of the senior debating team. There you go.
Okay.
This
is all becoming clear.
Stupidly, a box marked fly fishing and one marked fly tying. And here I am, in fact, not 2 days ago, hoping that I was going to fish the Ebble, which I've never fished, hoping that I could get in the river yesterday. On Sunday morning, I was at home over my fly tying vice, tying little flies. That's the impact education in Ireland can have on you, guy. Don't go there.
Your pet river is the River Lee, isn't it? Would that be right?
Yes, I can. Thanks to a bunch of ladies of 60 ladies and gentlemen who, for 186 years now, have owned 2.5 miles of chalk stream in Hertfordshire called the Emma Magna Fishery. And I was made chairman 6 or 7 years ago now.
Okay. So, and as a result of that, was that when all this sort of kind of clicked in your head about the rivers or seeing the state of the river or seeing the state of the trout?
I was made chairman for a very specific reason. Because as you will understand, for 186 years, it might not be the first time the members of the Alma Magna have had to defend their river. And in fact, as I later explained to the then chair of the Environment Agency, we've just added your name to a long, long list of other people this club has defeated in victorious ignominy over the last 180 years. My job was to go and pick a fight with the Environment Agency and Thames Water.
So before we talk about that fight, who were the previous enemies then? I mean, factories, locals of discharging?
The most obvious one, if you go to that part of the world, and it's a beautiful part of the world, part of the rest of the valley is now the Amal Magna Nature Reserve. Beautiful, beautiful nature reserve. An enormous wetland and lake created by gravel excavation. St. Albans Sand and Gravel Company bought the entire river valley back in the 1970s. The plan was to excavate the whole valley for water and for gravel. The river itself would have disappeared. And thanks to the members of the Alma Magna fishery, not for the first time in life, one public inquiry later, and the planning officer decided that a buffer had to be kept between any excavation and the river. The river had to be saved.
So your appointment was to bring the fight to the EA?
Yeah.
So what happens next?
I go for one meeting with the EA. I've spent my life working in the music industry. And I'm going to say this, there's kind of children here, if you'd like to put your fingers in your children's ears for a moment. The way we look at it in the music industry is when God was handing out bullshitters, he gave the music industry a second helping. And shall we say that one and only meeting I ever really went to with the Environment Agency, I realized that the ones that had left the music industry We're now working for the Environment Agency.
So, but I mean, I know you say you want to get grown-ups in the room. There are no members of the EA who are grown-ups. There's no one who would do...
Oh, well, there's a way you can stimulate this, because what I hadn't explained to them, the club had already spent about a year and a half working with the legal team, putting our case together, and when I went into the room to have that meeting, the lawyers were actually waiting for the phone call, yay or nay, issue the papers, we're going after them, we're going to take them to court, or, no, I think we can settle this because we got the grown-ups in the room. Sadly, I did have to go issue the papers.
Okay. What was the problem with the Lee? I mean, functionally, what was going on with
that river? Well, there was two things. One, the water was disappearing. So the river was physically drying up.
And that was because it was being over-abstracted?
Correct.
Right.
And bear in mind, the Elmo Magna, because the River Lee itself has been beaten, abused, industrialized for 1,000 years. It is the largest tributary of the Thames, and was used to bring any amount of commerce, food production in and out of the city of London. So we have records going back to the 1278 is the earliest records we have. Wow. About arguments over who controlled the water and who had access to it. So the truth was, the river was always being beaten up, and as a result, the Elmo Magna is now home to the last remaining breeding population of brown trout in the whole of the River Lee. That's an extraordinary thing to be able to say. But it's because of those 60 men and women who for 186 years have defended and occasions gone to great lengths to defend that river, defend that ecosystem, and defend that trout. So for me, I was simply inheriting the mantle from all of my predecessors, and clearly with the same goal in mind.
But you were getting your hands dirty. I seem to remember that there was a case in which you were literally trying to rescue actual trout.
Yes.
From stagnation water to...
Oh, it had got that bad. I can remember vividly one night I was standing on a bridge looking over the river with the river keepers on hand, the Environment Agency on hand, looking to me going, Fergal, the rescue team's on standby. We need to make a decision in the next half hour if we're going in to try and electrofish this river to save as many of that indigenous trout that have lived there for 8,000 years in that river, or are we going to let them die? You're in charge, Fergal. What's the decision?
And?
Taking trout out of a river like that's a really dangerous thing to be doing, because you're then having to put them into tanks and aerating the tanks. So it is a really tiny judgment thing. If we take them out, there is a likelihood that a large part of that population of trout will die.
Right.
If they get put back into the river, it is probably another large proportion of them will never reacclimatize to the river and die. And by simply taking them out of the river, you possibly put the whole population under danger. If you leave them in the river, there is a psychological argument that just toughens them up, makes them more competitive. They've learned to adapt to that kind of extreme condition, and in turn, they will pass that ability and those genetics, Darwin, through their DNA, back onto their siblings and onto future generations that can cope with the same thing. I made the call to keep them in the river.
Okay.
It started raining about 2 hours later.
Oh, okay.
It's all those confessions that I've gone to as an Irish Catholic child back in Ireland, finally paid off.
You needed to. So you're appointed basically because you were willing to take that fight to the air. You're also literally getting your hands dirty. You're getting in the mud. You're making these judgment calls. But obviously since then, and that was that was 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, you're... reputation as a river campaigner has suddenly gone whoosh like that. And I remember, I've interviewed you at least 2 or 3 times for various newspapers, and every time we walk around, you know, so people come up to you now, your recognition factor is not because of your music, it's now because of the crap in our water that people now think of you. That was it. We were next to that. What's the sewage works in near Twickenham called?
Mogden.
Mogden, we were sitting there, and you were saying, look, and he literally said to me, he said, look at all that lovely shit. And I thought, that was a surreal day for me. There was Fergal Sharkey, and we were talking about that. But that was it. And then a chap came up to you and said, just want to shake your hand, all the great work you're doing, Fergal. Can you tell us a little bit about how, from literally making judgment calls about brown trout and the Lee to suddenly now you're this national figure, you know, you are the lightning rod for this issue. How does that sort of come about?
But let me say, first of all, I would like to invite all of you guys, because the man sitting to my right was one of the very few in the early days of this mad lunatic campaign that came to me and did write an article for a very large national newspaper. So, ladies and gentlemen, if I could offer a quick round of applause for Guy Walters.
Thank you.
Take the compliment.
It's my grandfather.
Take the compliment.
I'll take it. What happens next? Because suddenly, you know, it's suddenly bigger than your river.
Way bigger than that. And again, for those of you with small, kind of delicate ears, feel free to put your fingers over them.
I said to Fergal, he is allowed to swear today.
Oh, I'm not going to. Promise not to. I've led this extraordinary life. Since I've been 20 years old, I can travel all over the world and go to extraordinary, beautiful, wonderful cities, Paris, New York, Tokyo, Los Angeles, Sydney, and random people would walk up to me in the street and want to shake my hand and talk to me about music. Now, what a beautiful thing. And gigs they've been to and records they loved and radio programs, phenomenal. There's been a massive change over the last 3 or 4 years. Now I have random people walking up to me in strange places I've never been, wanting to talk about shite and rivers. But here's the thing. I'd be really happy when we can all go back to talking about music again.
Okay.
The former chair of the EA asked me that question because clearly we took the EA to the High Court. Not only was I standing on the steps of the High Court, I was leaning on the doorbell, banging furiously in the knocker, demanding entry. So we managed to get the Alma Magna fishery resolved quite quickly. It was at that point that I then began to realize, because that kind of experience has made me curious, as to why 60 ladies and gentlemen who just want to go fishing had to take the Environment Agency basically to the doors of the High Court just to get them to do their job. And then I started scratching around. And then I began to realize that particularly England is peppered, festooned from one end to the other with these incredible community groups, community organizations, some of whom have been campaigning for decades. Earlier on, Guy and I were discussing the River Vare Society.
River Vare is St. Albans, right?
Yeah. And it's the river that gave name to Verulamium, the Roman city that established. Indeed, it gives you a clue. Back in the 1900s, when they discovered there may be something going on archaeologically there, what they first came across was the ruins of boats, ships, and anchors in the banks of the River Vare. The Romans had navigated up the Thames, up the Colne Valley, up the River Vare, and established the city that became Verulamium and the amphitheatre and everything else. You can now, as Guy knows, you can now walk across that river and not even get the tops of your shoes wet. It's been devastated by the water industry, devastated by over-abstraction, and here's the bit that made me furious and angry. Those are decent people. They're not militants, they're not activists, they're not campaigners. They're not specialist engineers, hydrologists, entomologists, biodiversity specialists. They're just people like the people in this audience living in the banks of a river, retaining a memory that not that long ago it didn't used to look like this. When I was a kid, I would go swimming in there. There would be brown trout and weeds and fish and animals and goats and moorhens and all kinds of stuff. And now it's just this dead, grey, toxic, smelly substance flowing down what was once this beautiful river. And those decent, decent people put their trust in the system. They would go and talk to the Environment Agency and talk to the water company. And as I explained to the chair of the EA, you as the Environment Agency, as the institution responsible, did the most despicable thing I can think of. You took those people's trust and you trashed it. Because they foolishly thought, as the regulator, you would do right by them, you would stand by them, and instead you've kept those people tied up in meetings, tied up in discussions, standing outside supermarkets, collecting petitions, doing litter picks, taking water samples, and you knew what the problem was, you've always knew what the problem was, you know what the fix is, but you were never going to implement the fix.
So the EA is part of the problem.
Correct.
And why is that?
It's just become institutionally dysfunctional. And by the way, I need to separate this because I don't spend enough time talking about this. When I or any of you that live next to a chalk stream from experience when I run into people from the EA wearing a dry suit, standing in a river, without exception, they're incredibly decent, decent people trying really hard to do the best they can in incredibly difficult circumstances. When it gets to the board and the senior management team, I may take a whole other use of vocabulary and a whole other approach to that one. In short, guy, they're completely incompetent.
But do they have the powers to do what needs to be done?
The EA right now has the power to walk into this land and demand to take away anything they want. Your mobile phone, your wallet, our comm set, if they think is some way evidence to any kind of environmental crime being committed, they already have the power and authority to do that kind of thing. Ofwat, its sister organization, has the power to dictate to any water company exactly what they want to do. How much to pay the chief executive, how much to pay the shareholders, how much to invest in water. And if water companies don't comply with that order, it's called an enforcement order, Ofwat then has the power to issue which fine them up to 10% of their annual turnover. Guess how many times in 33 years Ofwat's done that?
It's zero. If you didn't see that, it was a zero. You would have guessed. You would have guessed. So you'll find yourself knocking on the doors of the EA. Now, how about your interaction with the water companies themselves? Can you talk to me a little bit about how that's taking place?
Well, I normally just try to terrorize them. Because the simple thing is, the more I spoke to those community groups, the more I realized that the water companies, the other dollop of the bullshitters that wasn't left in the music industry, they went to work for water companies. And if any of you guys been interacting with a water company, I was having a conversation with somebody not an hour ago. Oh, well, let's see, our groundwater levels. Yes, you live in the chalk. It rained a lot last winter. Groundwater levels have risen. For a while, groundwater levels were above the sewage pipes, but because of the lack of investment and the lack of maintenance and the lack of structure and replacement in their systems, groundwater was seeping in to their underinvested, badly maintained, cracked, disjointed pipes, which was then flooding the sewage works, meaning they were dumping sewage into the Avon. By the way, in the Salisbury constituency, go and stand on top of that hill, turn 360 degrees, everything you can see before you. Last year, Wessex Water spent almost 23,000 hours dumping sewage into the environment you can see from the top of that hill. Throughout England itself, water companies spent 4.6 million hours just last year dumping sewage into the environment in England. So these guys know they're supposed legally to fix those pipes. They didn't. These guys also know and have now admitted it. We have paid them all of the funding they ever needed for 33 years for them to build, maintain, and operate a properly functioning sewage system. But guess what happened to the money? Turns out water companies have now paid their shareholders 72 billion quid in dividends.
In dividends, rather than it being ploughed back into the
system. Correct.
I mean, I've stood with you. Is it in Yule? Is it the Hogs Mill? Was it that?
Yeah.
And I remember you showed me very clearly, you know, you stand and you look one way up the bank, up the river, and it's ranunculus, it's bird life. I mean, you would see a kingfisher,
yeah,
quite easily. And then to the right, it's just as brown or as grey as this stage. And why is that? Because you can see one pipe below your feet,
yep,
just spilling out raw sewage into the chalk stream. And below it, it's functionally dead.
For those that don't understand chalk streams, it's really, really simple. Look for ranunculus. What is crowfoot? There's various names for it. For those that aren't technically minded, to your average little bug, grub, invertebrate, ranunculus is a 5-star resort hotel with a 3-star Michelin restaurant attached to it. And ranunculus is very fussy about where it wants to put its feet down and where it wants to grow. And it needs an awful lot of very clean, fast-flowing, highly oxygenated water. But if you have the ranunculus because of the water, you'll have all the bugs and the grubs. And if you've got all the bugs and the grubs, you'll have all of the fish. And you've got all of the fish, the kingfishers and the herons and the water voles and everything else will move in. And suddenly you create this extraordinary biodiversity habitat, and all because of one silly old weed called ranunculus. But it's really temperamental. It does not like filthy, smelly, degraded water. And that's why as soon as you put sewage in there, put too much phosphate in there, too much nitrate, too much ammonia, coming off the back of sewage an untreated sewage, ranunculus will die off within a heartbeat, and bingo, you've lost that simple foundation building block. No ranunculus, no bugs, grubs, insects, shrimp, no fish, no animals, no mammals, a whole ecosystem devastated simply because the water industry knowingly, willingly was not doing its job.
I mean, I remember going to the River Chess with you as well, and that's Chesham in the Chilterns, and it was just a grey sludge. And I remember you telling me that most of that sludge is run off from the road, so it's full of hydrocarbons.
Yep.
And the teams who have to remove that sludge from the river have to wear special protective equipment because they'll just come out in hives. And it all has to be taken to a proper processing plant to be got rid of. I mean, it's just a toxic swamp now. It's not a river in any sense.
Well, you see, here's the thing. There's a reason why we have laws supposedly strictly enforced around collecting, treating, and disposing of sewage. It's highly toxic, dangerous stuff. It's full of carcinogenics, polio, typhus, just the litany goes on to the extent that even people who now work for water companies dealing with the back end of a sewage plant fundamentally have to wear biodiversity suits that they simply cannot in any way, shape or form physically, orally come into contact even with the vaporized spray from it. They're there with respirators, i.e. like fighting some sort of biohazard chemical fire. That's the level of it. But by the way, we didn't spend enough money on our sewage works. We didn't fix our pipes. So we just dumped this toxic waste into the nearest river. And I'll give you an example. Is it the Bayford sewage plant up on the Nadder on the edge of Salisbury?
Anyone live near there?
Last year, the Bayford sewage works spent over 1,600 hours dumping raw sewage straight into the Nadder just upstream of Salisbury. And all of it will wash straight down through the town.
And that's not counting what's happening in Salisbury. There's no doubt dumping
place. Within Salisbury, greater Salisbury area, over 23,000 hours just last year alone.
So that's turning on a pipe for 23,000 hours and letting sewage flow.
Yeah.
I mean, 23,000 hours is a
lot. Oh, well, that's what, about 2.5 years or something?
2.5 years of sewage, just, yeah.
So if it was one tap, effectively, turn it on, just leave it for 2.5 years or thereabouts.
And I think I worked out that nationally, it's like you're running a tap full of sewage, a pipe about that big since about 1702. And that's what goes in every year. That's what goes in every year.
And by the way, here's the kind of really infuriating part. You've paid them not to do it. They've been paid the money. The regulator admits it. The water company owns up to it. We paid them all of the funding they ever needed to fix that sewage system. So now we've got our rivers are full of sewage. By the way, there's not a single river anywhere in England that's not polluted. And one of the largest sources of that pollution, water industry. The Avon catchment, all five rivers, as some of you know, afforded some of the heaviest form of international legal protection available. SSSI, Special Area of Conservation. I did check this morning. As we speak, 87% of that catchment is now failing. It's what's called unfavorable condition. 87%.
We'll have questions in 12 and a half minutes.
I've got this.
I want to talk to you in the next 12 minutes and 15 seconds then about the future, enforcement, what you can do and what we can do. And, you know, obviously we're in an election cycle at the moment. So where are we looking? How are we going to make these people sit up and do what they need to do? What's the first thing they need to do? What, mend the pipes, stop dumping sewage? How is this achieved?
Oh, in terms of the industry itself, there's two things have to be accomplished. They're going to have to go and mend the pipes in the sewage network and start now planning. Oh, what are we going to do about this 25 million people running out of water thing?
Yeah.
We've not actually built a reservoir anywhere near the whole of southern southeast England since the 1980s or something. There's no supply pipe. They do it with electricity. Salisbury suddenly discovered it's in the FA Cup final and they're playing Manchester United and suddenly it's half time and the electric grid, they can divert gigawatts of electricity at the flick of a switch down into Wiltshire, because everybody in Wiltshire is going to go for the bathroom or go and put the kettle on. You can't do that with water. The actual network simply physically does not exist. So that's going to be sorted out. On top of that, you have a regulatory system in terms of Ofwat and the EA that has proved itself to be completely incompetent, if not dysfunctional. We've been talking about Wessex Water. They have just applied to the regulator to be allowed to put your bills up by another 50% over the next 5 years. Now, how's that cost of living crisis thing working out for you?
Not well.
It's crazy. Now, that decision's due on July the 11th, or the interim decision. I'm getting to the point where I'm becoming increasingly militant, I have to say.
Suddenly, you're militant.
And shall we just say that depending on what Ofwat announces on July the 11th, you may be hearing an awful lot more from me, and I apologise in advance. But I'm truly, truly getting to the stage that the water companies know. They've known for a long time. They've known from day one. They know what their legal obligation is. The Environment Agency and Ofwat, they know. By the way, this country was taken to the European Court of Justice 12 years ago and found guilty by the then highest court in Europe, found guilty of breaking the law by allowing water companies to dump sewage illegally into our rivers and onto our beaches. So they've known for 12 years. That's what the court said. So they knew before that. So for me personally, I'm kind of one stage away from turning up outside Parliament and bringing a small army with me.
Well, you might get a few here to join you. Your mercenary army, all wearing Panama hats. No red trousers today, it's too hot. But so the water companies have said, they've sort of stuck their finger in the air and gone, it's about $600 billion to repair the pipes. Tell me what, I think I know your answer to this. What is your response to that figure when they say $600 billion?
Here's how this works. I spent, after my career as a musician, I spent some of my career working at a reasonably senior level in the music industry itself, running companies and things. That quote actually came from the then Minister for Water. It's out there in Hansard. You can go look it up. And what the minister concerned told Parliament was it was going to cost somewhere between $130 billion and $650 billion to fix this. Let me tell you, if anybody ever comes and tells you that any project is going to cost between $130 billion and $160 billion, what they've just told you is they've no idea what they're talking about. They just made something up. That's a half a trillion pound variance in a budget. You literally were out the door 5 minutes ago smoking wacky-backy. You've had another three glasses of sherry. It's nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
So the figure was 130 to 600 million.
Correct.
Yeah.
And somewhere vaguely in between. Now, when you actually got your hands on the report that the minister was referring to, it did mention, we could probably maybe fix about 80% of it for 18 billion. Oh, and by the way, that's 18 billion we've already given you. You've clearly given it to your shareholders.
Yep.
So you know what? Go back to your shareholders. You're not getting another penny out of my pocket.
It's often said that maybe renationalisation is the way to solve this problem, but you've got the issue of buying people out of contracts, buying companies out of contracts. But we were talking just a little bit earlier, and you were saying, of course, there are other options available if you want to force hands. So could you talk us through that a little?
Well, here's the thing. Superficially, if we renationalise them, we then also have to take on board the, and I'm glad some of you are lying down, the £64 billion worth of debt these companies have also got themselves into. And by the way, if you think that £64 billion worth of debt went on fixing your pipes, didn't. The bulk of it, they also paid that over to themselves as dividends. That was just another way of extracting more money out of the company.
I mean, that debt is almost equivalent to the actual money paid out in dividends, isn't it? It's about 10 million.
And in fact, here in Wessex Water, I might be wrong, but I think it's almost getting on for about 20% of your bill now goes and paying interest on that debt.
Just the interest?
Just the interest. 20% of your bill. Yeah. And that's money again. Yeah. Financial engineering, they've skanked this. Now, that's not to say if you talk to the chairman of Thames Water, who, in my opinion, especially been bankrupt for about a year now anyway, he'll go, it's going to cost billions. Well, here's the thing. I could do nothing more if I were the government but amend the audit regulations to force you to declare the cost of fixing this as a liability on your balance sheet. At that point, you fail the going concern test. At that point, you're now bankrupt, and water companies cannot go bankrupt because if they do, all of the company assets and all of the value automatically refers back to the state, and I've just nationalized you, and it didn't cost me a penny.
So let's just, I just want to repeat, is this likely to happen?
What is likely to happen, in my view, I am pushing hard, and what I would like to see is a complete root and branch review and, if need, total restructuring of the regulatory system of what the EA, they've proved they're just institutionally incompetent. There's no point in discussing them further. The Water Institute itself, Thames Water is going to need refinancing. If you get into a conversation about that, to give you a little background here, and if I lose anybody, throw things at Guy. Thames Water's bonds, i.e. Thames Water's IOUs, where they owe 16 billion quid. So their IOUs, their bonds a couple of weeks ago were trading for 5.6 pence in the pound. So the people who owe them are basically going, give me 5 pence and I'll give you an IOU that says Thames Water, maybe we'll pay you a pound. That's the state that company's in. That's going to need refinancing. There's at least four or five other companies that are teetering in there, or as I refer to it, in the intensive care unit under 24-hour supervision.
Right, okay.
And if Thames Water goes down, it'll bring those other four or five companies with them.
So like Southern, where's it?
Southern Water's in there. Yorkshire Water, things looking pretty precarious. Portsmouth Water, Essex Water, SES just about got bought recently by Southwest Water. So either way, you're looking at possibly getting on for half of the water industry needing refinancing. You're not going to do that at that scale without then getting into a whole conversation about ownership and structure and who owns and controls these companies. I'll give you a last bit of an indication. Thames Water recently defaulted on a £490 million debt. The Chinese government already owned 10% of Thames Water. I'm told that debt has a debt for equity swap. If you can't pay me back my money, I can grab equity in exchange of it. Two of the biggest creditors are two Chinese state national banks. So there is potential the Chinese government is about to become the largest shareholder on the monopoly supplying drinking water to 15 million people in the capital city of a G7 member state. Have you explained this idea to government?
Yeah. And the city with the ninth at risk of losing
everything.
Yeah. So is nationalisation, though, necessarily the magic bullet that will help?
No, for me, I would not, right now, I would not take everything off the table, but I would not put anything on the table. We're going to have to sit there because maybe not some sort of mutualisation would help. Perhaps maybe the model the French have, where the state owns all of the infrastructure all of the time and simply leases out, contracts out the work on a 10, 12, 15-year rolling basis. Let me put it this way. England, so far as I can figure out, England is the only country in the world with an absolutely 100% privatized water industry. What does that fact alone tell you about what everybody else thinks about the water industry?
Okay. Yeah. So I think that tells us everything. So we're going to have a change of government.
Yeah.
You're obviously going to, I think we know which way that's going to go. You are presumably already working with them. Are you sort of have some sort of formal arrangement or role, or are you just going to keep independent Fergal banging the drum at festivals online?
I'm just the angry Irishman who keeps banging on about chalk streams. listen, government, the Labour Party's put its position out there. It wants to put the water companies into special measures and is by indication saying that they will introduce jail sentences for water companies' executives. They'll ban bonuses and everything else. I cannot speak on behalf of the Labour Party.
Sure.
For me, I would want to get in that room and look at every single option available to know mankind, because that's how I ran my corporate career, and I've never, ever made any decision until I've had the accounts in front of me that I've seen where the money's going, and I've seen all the permutations and all the variations, and I've been able to make a really well-informed, concise, fundamentally scientifically-based decision. So that's why, for me, everything's up for grabs, and we should make sure, but I think what we can be sure of, come July the 5th, there is going to have to be a really big root and branch review of the water industry and a very big discussion about how it's run, operated, and financed.
Would you take a formal role from a new government?
No, I was very happily minding my own business in retirement. I retired 12 years ago. And it was only because of standing in a chalk stream getting angry that I decided to shake my fist. And I knew at the time, I remember sitting on my sofa with my wife going, I know that this is going to absorb huge amounts of my time. I know what it's going to take to do this. And I could just end up being that sad old bloke that had a couple of hit records howling at the moon while standing by the rhododendron in his back garden. Shall we just say, well, I'll give you an indication. And it's thanks to you guys, by the way. I know it's easy for me to sound and for Guy to make it sound like I've achieved something miraculous. Here's where we are. The last bit of polling data I've seen from the Sunday Times, 56% of voters are now saying the sewage scandal will influence how they vote at the next election. 69% of voters are now saying they're actually so fed up they want to renationalize the whole industry. When I was sitting on that sofa with nothing more than a mobile phone and a bad attitude, I never thought for one example we would end up at the Chalk History Festival.
No. And Fergal,
or 69% of voters going, we want to cause these people harm.
And Fergal, I think everyone's so grateful and will continue to be grateful for the energy you put in. As you said, you could have just sort of sat with your fishing rod and, you know, thought about your royalties or whatever it is. And that anger is very, very rare to find someone who combines anger with charisma. And you certainly do that, which is a really unique sort of combination. So before we have some questions, can we all just thank Fergal for coming here? Now, And I know you've all sat out in the hottest part of the day and you're all wearing hats. So it is, the questions will go on until just after two and then we have to put the guillotine down. Now, I know that the gentleman in the orange trousers in the front had a question, and then the chap in the white shirt, and then the lady in the front there. But, and obviously, if there are people up in the tent at the back who want to ask a question, yeah, there's a chap wearing his hat. So if
Hello.
We get, can we get another microphone up at the top? Are there two microphones?
Hello to the those of you in the cheap seats at the back.
Yeah, well, they're the sensible seats. So anyway, so the chap in the sunglasses here first.
Thank you, Fergal. That was absolutely brilliant and possibly the most important talk of the festival. So thank you. With many of these success, a hallmark of a successful campaign is often a kind of tipping point. So Alan Bates and the Post Office, the point they reached when the ITV documentary came out changed everything for the campaign. Can you envisage a similar kind of tipping point for your campaign that might change the
agenda? I'm gonna be somewhat cryptic because I have to be at this point, but forgive me. That date that I mentioned about July the 11th, when Ofwat is going to issue its interim determinations as to how much your water bills are going to go up over the next 5 years. And by the way, count yourself lucky. You're not a Southern Water customer. Southern Water has applied to put their bills up by 91% over the next 5 years. Now, if this turns out the way I think it's going to, I'm probably going to push, right now my hand's hovering over a bit of a nuclear button. And I'm going to mention a date, Saturday the 14th of September. Keep that date in your mind. If I think what happens on July the 11th, I'll be seeing you all again on Saturday the 14th of December. More to be explained shortly.
December or September?
September.
September.
September the 14th.
Okay, so that's Fergal's nuclear bomb goes off on the 14th.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Okay, well, that's good to know. Right, go. Who's next? The lady there, yeah.
Hi, thanks for the talk. It was great. What can local communities do to clean up their own part of the river? We've just achieved bathing water status for Fordingbridge on the Avon. What are the next steps? How can we hold the water companies to account?
Oh, well, listen, there's two things to do. A small bit of politics, but you do it yourself. On July the 4th, we will elect local MPs. So between now and then, I would encourage you to get in contact with every single candidate in your constituency and demand an answer from them to that very question. And I'm not playing partisan party politics here. Ask every damn one of them. If we, the people of this constituency, elect you to represent us at the highest level in this country, what the hell are you going to do to sort these rivers out and start holding this water company to account? Now, as for the water companies themselves, here's my approach. Fergal, the chief executive, the chairman, lunch, breakfast, dinner, Harry's Barn, Mayfair, pick a restaurant anywhere in the world. We want to be there. My answer is always really simple. Ask them two questions. What do they think the problem is? And what do they think the solution is? Otherwise, they're going to bamboozle you. And you will hear nothing but blah, 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 blah. And I suspect you're nodding your head. You've been listening to blah, blah, blah for quite some time from Wessex Water. So here's the thing. You will not get an answer to the first one because they won't own up to what the problem is, because then they would have to own up they're the cause of it. And if they do come up with a solution, I guarantee you it's the one that will have the least impact on them and the less financial cost to them. And when you've got those two bad answers, you then get up and walk out of the meeting. I personally won't even talk to a water company anymore. I make it clear. Show me your strategy and plan to deal with the over-abstraction of our chalk streams, which around here, by the way, chalk streams currently, I think, over-extracted about 1.2 billion litres of water throughout southern England. And show me your plan and strategy and how you're going to deal with the sewage crisis. And until you do either, I have no interest in sitting across any dinner table or restaurant table listening to your chief executive spend another hour talking another load of blah, 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 blah. So start taking control, start dominating and strategizing that conversation. Do not let them do it. They've been doing it for far too long.
Fergal, there's a gentleman right at the back. So that's not working.
Hugh, thanks for everything. You haven't had time to talk about agriculture and runoff agriculture, whether it's chicken shit, Y Valley, all that stuff,
yep.
Phosphates. Do you have any optimism at all that that's going to change? Because for them, what you've been talking about is quite a useful deflection. Thanks. Yeah.
Oh, and listen, the water companies also, by the way, blame farmers. They do it to each other. The simple round answer is every single river in England's polluted and vying between each other for first and second place is agriculture and is the water industry. Now, by the way, I'm not talking about an awful lot of farmers that I know. In fact, the next one at the Alma Magna, just unbelievably supportive and helpful. And I know that Nicholas Buxton, if Nicholas thought for 1 second anything his farm was doing was impacting upon that last remaining population of brown trout, Nicholas would be mortified and just in complete horror. That's not to say you can say the same for chicken farmers in the Wye Valley. Because as it turns out, there are now 26 million chickens up the Wye Valley. And as it turns out, an awful lot, if not most of that waste, is ending up directly in the river one way, shape or form. So the truth is, we are going to have a very big conversation. It's unavoidable. And that's not just about the environment. Because I'm told by farmers, the price they're getting for a pint of milk, dairy farming in its current form in the West Country is probably unsustainable. And as it turns out in East Anglia, did you know we grow 50% of the UK's potato crop in East Anglia? It takes 60 tons of water to produce 1 ton of potatoes, and there is now more rain in South Sudan than there is in East Anglia. It is actually now the driest region in the UK. So now there's a whole community and farmers and families over there whose livelihoods are now looking unsustainable. So for a new government, what do we need to do over the next 10, 15, 20 years that we can transition those families in the least disruptive way possible so they can continue on to have healthy, successful businesses and the generations to come can carry on that farming practice in East Anglia. But from the advice I'm getting, you will not be growing potatoes in East Anglia in 30 years' time.
Okay.
There's where we are.
Massive social. There's a gentleman over there, the pink striped shirt.
Yes, and irony upon irony is that another organisation that shares your indignation is supporting wounded veterans, which looked at using veterans, still does, to mitigate the damage and use their skills to liaise with local people. And they have a river forum. It took them a small veteran charity to get together all the people you mentioned, EA, yeah. Highways and everything else. One of the things that came out of their last river forum was road runoff,
yep.
Which is essentially tire pollution,
yep.
Made worse, ironically, by the heavier electric cars. I just wondered if you would like to comment on that.
The statistics I was giving you earlier on, very loosely, 40% agriculture, 40% water industry, about 10% is National Highways. Another failed government quangle. Who are charged with and have any number of settling ponds up and down the motorways. So if you imagine a large stretch of the A303, it rains, all that muck runs off it. So not only is it tire rubbers, microplastics, engine oil, petrol, diesel, chemicals leaching out of the tarmac on a hot sunny day, and it all suddenly gets washed into the local river. You've just killed the whole thing. So what's supposed to happen, generically, they go into settling ponds. You'll see them frequently by big motorways, and it's supposed to then allow the sediment to drop out to allow then the clean water to filter off over a weir down into the nearest water course in the most environmentally least impactful way possible. But guess what? National Highways has not been maintaining or servicing those things for bloody years, and now they're just dumping what actually is a really lethal, toxic cocktail. So ironically enough, shall we say, it came as no shock to me that when I realized about a year ago, one of the non-executive directors on National Highways was the chief executive of Southern Water. There you go.
Whoa. Okay.
You just take one incompetent institution and transplant it on top of another. It's another organization needs a massive, massive written branch review, and if not, removal and replacement and everything else. It's got to be dealt with.
Gentleman in the green shirt just sitting down there.
Something that we could all do individually is when we have excess medicines or all kinds of medicine, not just the antibiotics, we should take them back to the nearest pharmacy. They will dispose of them more carefully than we will. Don't put them down the drain if they can go down the drain, and take them to the pharmacy. They do get in the rivers.
It's an incredibly important part, and I've just reminded me of something that all of you can do. Flea and tick treatment for dogs. Do not let your dog into the bloody nearest chalk stream, because you've now just washed what actually is an insecticide straight into the nearest river. And all those plant little grubs and bugs and shrimps and invertebrates, you've just now killed a lot of them, simply by allowing your dog to go for a bloody swim in a river. So please read the packet and follow it where it says, harmful to aquatic life. Bit of a clue on the labelling.
There's a lady over there in a sort of beige top.
Good afternoon. I'm a victim of Southern Water. Right. In our village, we've just had a housing proposition for 125 houses. When the parish council remonstrated that our sewage works would not take it, it was rejected because it is not a planning issue. This is a whole integrated system. So when you're talking to your local MP or your local candidate, they're all talking about reforming the planning system. Sewage must be part of new build planning system.
Here's how this works. You are right to enthuse you a little. There are, to my certain knowledge, now two local authorities, Oxford and Cambridge, who are blocking planning applications for that very reason. They're challenging the law. Now, here's how it works. Water companies operate in a five-year cycle, and they will produce plans to go, here's the population increase, here's the extra demand for water, the extra sewage that we're going to have to build, here's how much it's going to cost to deliver all of that, and to go through this five-yearly cycle negotiation with the regulator Ofwat. And that's why housing, in terms of water supply and sewage, was moved away out of planning, because it forms part of that five-yearly price discussion with Ofwat. Here's the downside. Water companies are operating state-granted monopolies. The only way they have to grow their businesses is to either persuade the regulator to allow them to charge you more water as a customer or get more customers. And that means more building more houses. And you will be really surprised, and go and check when you get home. I absolutely guarantee you, your local water company, in one way or another, will be influencing every single planning application, every development agency, and anything to do with the word growth in your area. They'll be paying for it, railroading it, sponsoring it, providing secretarial support, because the only way they can get more houses is to actually push the planning process in their favor, to build more houses, whether you like the idea or not, and whether or not their infrastructure and their water supply and the sewage can deal with it. So there are two, as we speak, have gone, we're not going to actually grant these planning applications until Ofwat and the water companies start giving us the answers we want, even though you tell us it's not our business, we're making it our business. And personally speaking, my hat's off and a big round of applause to the Oxford and Cambridge planning departments. Well done.
Right, we've got time for one quick question. 48 seconds to go. Rob, you better make this quick.
Hi, Fergal. Thank you for that. You're a legend. I just wanted to say we're one of the people that you hate. We're riparian Ebble. We're lucky enough to live on the river, and we got some brown trout with your name on them if you want to come and fish them. But good news story. I hear what you say about the EA, but we've had an amazing support from the Wessex Rivers Trust, and I don't know whether you deal with them, but I'd just like to say on a good news story, they have been so supportive, creative, helped us to restore what was a interesting bit of river that we have, and I think on a good news story, they've been amazing. So I'd sort of urge anyone who doesn't know or hasn't worked with them to speak to them as well.
Is that Mike Blackman, is it?
It is, and yeah. Matt and Matt.
Yeah, do quite incredible work, and end on a good note. The river down the back of where we're sitting, the Ebble, is not only one of the few chalk streams in the country that is by the EA graded as being in good ecological condition, it is one of the few rivers anywhere in the country that is good ecological condition. In fact, in 2009, 25% of England's rivers were in good ecological condition. That dropped to 16% in 2015. It's currently 14%. And the Environment Agency's latest projection is unless something truly significant happens by 2027, just 6% of England's rivers will be in good ecological condition. You've got one here right in your backyard. Treasure it, protect it, stand up for it, because by God, I think it's worth saving, and I know you will, and I'll be happily come back in a few years' time and we can celebrate that you've added the Nadder to that, and the Bourne, and the Avon itself. These chalk streams are precious. Get out there and fight for them. My name is Fergal Sharkey. May your God go with you.